And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us today. And once again, it's my time for my favorite part of the show, which is always the interview. And for that, we have a special guest. Teased it a little bit. I think it was last week. I was prepping for this guy because he deserves that kind of entrance, right? If he was a pitcher, he'd have his special walkout music. Great to have you back, Tony. It's Tony Greer at TG Macro. We've had him on the show before, but Tone, thanks for agreeing to come back on and sharing your thoughts with us.
Zach, it's great to be here, man. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there pretty well. No complaints. You know, all in all, if you're still above ground and you've still got a job in 2020, you probably shouldn't be complaining, right?
Exactly. Surviving is the new killing it.
That's right. That should be a motto for parenting, right?
Yeah.
Surviving is killing it.
Yep.
Okay, well, so Tone, I always like to get you on, obviously, and enjoy talking to you and getting your feedback. But
thank you.
You did, and by the way, you've had a pretty good year, man. You've had some really good calls.
Can you hear me knocking on wood? Yeah, so far it's gone. So far it's gone okay.
we'll take it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you did an appearance though recently on Real Vision, and it was the daily briefing, and quite honestly, I doing what we do, I don't usually watch it, but I saw you on there, and I was like, okay, I got to hear what Tony has to say. And you went through your thesis, and
oops. Sorry.
You're good. But you went through your thesis and laid it all out, and the kiss of death, like I was telling Brent Johnson the other week, I go, look, I agree with you, and that's probably why you should fade your own call. But kiss of death it really resonated with me because I was seeing a lot of the same things, but you tied it together because we all know narrative is very important in markets, probably more important than it's ever been. And the way you tied it together, I just sat back in my chair and I went, oh my God, the guy, he's right. He's right. And before I let you go on, I want to tell you specifically, now, we could both be wrong, but we've watched this unprecedented run in growth in tech that we all know about. We've talked about, till we're blue in the face. Mm-hmm. And coming into this year, you had record outperformance for a record period of time with growth in tech. Then you drop a black swan event that just so happens to be immensely beneficial to that same sector of stocks that's dominated for the last decade, and a death knell for the types of stocks that have underperformed. And you look at it and go, talk about a recipe for a blow-off top, right? In those individual sectors, that blowout divergence. I believe that's where we are. But I hadn't tied it together until you laid out your thesis, and I went, holy smokes, he's got a point. If there is a turning point, this sure looks like it. So before I'm putting words in your mouth, kind of give us an abbreviated version or take your time, however. But I just wanted you to lay that out one more time and tell us what you're seeing.
Sure, Zach. It's, I try to just let the markets tell me what's going on. And, they came out on what I'm calling Miracle Monday, which was November 9th. The Monday morning where we came out and it looked like we were signing up with President-elect Biden, which it still probably looks like. The market is factoring in, and we had the Pfizer vaccine. And so all of a sudden, this new wave of news on the other side of a binary, this is now the election decision that the market is getting to absorb for the first time. And now all of a sudden, we've got a realistic look at a vaccine, which we had been told was months/maybe years away. So now the market's got to adjust to all this, and what it adjusted with, in my opinion, and I feel like it has been fairly confirmed since then, since we've had two what I call Miracle Mondays now, it just came in Monday the 16th to Moderna's vaccine. We got more positive news this week about Pfizer's vaccine, that it's 95% effective or something. But what this is doing is it's causing the market to look all the way past even these lockdowns that are occurring as we record this in New York City. New York City schools are about to shut down now because of the rising COVID infections. Excuse me. Sorry about that. maybe can edit that out. but my point is, the market is telling you that we are now beyond COVID. And the reason I'm saying that is, you know, I feel like I've got an accountable argument is, number one, the S&P is trying to break out through this 3550 top. So it's trying to take those positive optics and run with it. All of the market-based inflation expectations went straight up on those two Mondays, right? There's been some back and fill. The paths have not been linear, but the market-based inflation expectations, and I'm talking about the yield curve, I'm talking about break-evens, I'm talking about flat-out 10-year yields breaking out above their 50-day moving average for the first time in quite a while. These are the things that you can look at and say, okay, if I close my eyes to what's going on outside the window and I say, what is the bond market telling me? The bond market is telling me that we're reopening today, right? So today, the markets are pricing in what a reopening is going to look like. So what is that going to look like, Zach? It's going to look like an unwind of what we've seen since the March 23rd low. Right. Since the March 23rd COVID bottom, when the market finally dusted itself off from collapsing for, you know, several, probably 6 weeks straight, it decided back then that the stocks that were going to perform were the FANG stocks first and foremost. Right. The lockdown stocks were going to perform, starting with Netflix, because that's how we're killing time and where nobody's putting their phone down. And so Apple's rallying and they're all on social media. And so Facebook is rallying and Google is rallying. And you're looking at this and saying, wow, the stores are closed. And so now Amazon has got this crazy advantage, right? So there goes that beginning of the head of the rotation starting, right? Big cap out in front. What falls behind? The Russell, small cap stocks, the ones that can't cope with the lockdowns, the ones that can't make payroll, the ones that have lousy cash flow. Those stocks are getting butchered. Anything with a lot of debt now because it can't make its cash flow payments in the near term, butchered. So that rotation persisted really in up and down markets for about 10 months from March through November, right up to those two miracle Mondays, right? So now since you see that sea change, like you pointed out, in value versus growth and a few other things, you see some dramatic sea change in other parts of the market. Now you step outside the bond market and you look at the equity market and you say, okay, what just happened? Okay, so we're now rallying the equity market, but what's going on beneath the rally? The FANG stocks that had been rallying pretty much every day for 10 months are no longer rallying. They have stopped rallying. It was probably the top when Apple, gapped open higher to that all-time high print of around 138, like two or three sessions after it split. And from that point, tech has been struggling, right? So it makes sense now that we've got the stock splits in Tesla and Apple in the rearview mirror at the top of the technology market. And now on this side of this Miracle Monday rotation, these stocks aren't going anywhere, still haven't gone anywhere. And what's taken off? Other sectors of the market that had been pinned down because of the lockdown. So what's taken off so far? Transports have taken off, right? Aerospace and defense stocks have taken off with the new Biden administration in mind. You know, we're probably not going to have another 4 years with no more wars if Biden takes over. Energy stocks that have been held underwater with the idea that Biden's coming after fracking. You know, they're now up 25% since those lows, right? Bank stocks that had been going nowhere, really kind of underperforming the S&P, are now rallying. Transports in general, right? So the whole rotation has changed and, you know, we're trying to decide now whether it's going to be the kind of thing where those sectors can rally and FANG stocks will stay sideways, broadly speaking, and technology, broadly speaking, will stay sideways. That's another factor. The subsectors of tech, you know, they were all part of the lockdown rally, right? You needed, your cybersecurity because you were working from home. You were on social media because you were working from home. That sector still leading tech on the year. You know, the internet sector, because the software sector, one of the leading sectors, subsectors of tech, now flat in the last couple of weeks. But so my point is, you know, these are the parts of the rotation now that have completely changed. Since they've completely changed with the change in the bond market and, you know, with a lot of experts that I've recently listened to on podcasts, you know, with Grant Williams, like Felix Zuloff and Jim Rogers, saying that, you know, no doubt about it, this bond market is in a bubble with rates around here. So if we've got a reversal potentially in the bond market, we've got to watch and see what happens with the stock market. But the biggest thing is that inflation trades started working after Miracle Monday and the lockdown trades stopped working. So I don't want to go on too long a diatribe, but I wanted to explain it and lay it out as clearly as I could for you, so that you can maybe shoot holes in my theory and let me know what I'm missing.
No, Tony, like I said, kiss of death perhaps, but I couldn't agree with you more. The other thing that's really caught my eye, and we do multiple things here. We've got an algorithmically traded momentum portfolio that's obviously killed it. That's been a place to be. But we're very much a value-tilted shop. And I will say from my perspective, one of the things that's interesting is we're watching a lot of these value names that, I mean, it really didn't even matter what they did, Tony. I mean, you know, they're mid-small cap value names. They'd announce monster earnings. The stock could go up 2.5%, give it back over the next two sessions. It just didn't even matter. We had one stock that we held. Podcast listeners are probably tired of hearing the story, but we had a stock that we held for 4 years. Over that period of time, revenues went up 50%, margins improved, business was just going like gangbusters. Stock didn't move. It didn't move. The PE ratio went from 14 when we bought it down to like 9. That's all. And we've seen all of those things take a jump, breakout of long-term downtrends. I'm talking 6-7 years. Yeah. To the point where you're looking at the screen going, man, I can't remember the last time I've seen this. Obviously, you've addressed the energy markets. It just seems to me like this, like you were alluding to, it was the perfect catalyst to get that, you know, just that one last ridiculous, unrealistic, nonsensical push higher in value. I mean, for God's sakes, man, we saw Apple added $1 trillion of market cap in 6 months on nothing other than a stock split, essentially. You know, and so you're looking at this going. Go ahead.
Well, allow me to interrupt. Not only a stock split, that's we had identified the NASDAQ whale as to who was buying all those options that were causing, you know, that was causing the volatility market to stay bid for June, July, and August when the whole, you know, NASDAQ went vertical. Right. So there was a huge client out there, a.k.a. SoftBank, that was buying upside calls from dealers at that point. And that was just causing all the dealers to have sort of negative gamma, which means that they're getting shorter as the market's going higher. You know, and that's why we went into that period for July and August where, you know, tech basically just ticked straight up. And then it culminated in the Apple split at the tail end of it. Right. Apple split, you know, what was it at the beginning or last day of August 31st and came in, I think, on August 31st post split and then traded on September 1st and September 2nd. It's carved the peak when it gapped to an open higher of 138 and carved a high of 138 and went straight down. So.
Right. Right.
You know, that's just, you know, I'm saying that's just a part of it. That's part of the tech rally. And now, you know, Apple's been kind of sideways and everything else has been sideways on this side of that looking past COVID type of trade, you know. And if there's one thing that's been, you know, blindingly obvious is that the market is now responding to stimulus. Right. The market is now. Yeah, you know, it is. It's now it's going back to responding to its core tenet, which is, you know, the Federal Reserve is inflating assets. And so, you know, we've got more stimulus coming. We've got the economy looking past. You've got the market looking past far enough past, you know, these lockdowns to, you know, basically a reopening almost of the economy. And all of that put together, you know, with the stimulus, with relatively low interest rates, with, you know, looking for probably more potentially fiscal stimulus after the election. You know, what tell me what the catalyst is to turn the S&P over. You know, I feel like it's a breakout in motion that is going to stay in motion now until acted upon by an outside force. So we'll see if we run into another type of swan like COVID or something like that, which you never know. But, you know, I feel like the path for this is pretty clear that we're going to go higher.
OK, so question for you on that, because I'm kind of torn on that one. if you have, if we have seen the crescendo for the most part in a lot of these tech names, one of the things that I've been wondering is, could you have a scenario where you see the reflation trade come back on? You see some of this COVID premium starting to leak out of these tech names, and there's a lot of it. But you see that. Can the market advance if those top tech stocks are going sideways to negative?
Well, it can. Yes, absolutely. Right. I would say never, never would I say never, even about a dynamic like that, that we've seen where Apple and, you know, basically, you know, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon have become the biggest stocks in the market. They drive a huge portion of the S&P, of the NASDAQ, et cetera, et cetera. Now, can they, if they start going down dramatically, Zach, if they, you know, if the market takes a turn and they start nosediving, then everything's going to go. But do I see a scenario where potentially we can have other parts of other sectors of the economy rally really, really sharply and, you know, maybe make up for a lot of the lack of performance? And I'm not talking about, you know, a market where the S&P continues to sail like it's been sailing higher for the last 5 years. I'm talking about maybe lower S&P returns, but you have some outstanding returns in some of the smaller sectors of the market, like energy. You know, like, you know, who cares if Apple's sideways for 3 months? And, you know, if you're missing out on energy, which goes up 20% for 3 months in a row, you know what I mean? Like from these levels, you know, FANG stocks are not going to do that. But from these levels, airlines can do that. From these levels, cannabis stocks can do that. From these levels, oil services stocks can triple. You know, and so kind of I feel like with those sectors of the market and, you know, sectors like home builders gaining strength with the new, you know, everybody staying at home, working, you know, a huge portion of the country is going to work from home even after COVID now. So the home builders have taken on a personality of their own. You know, you have, you had healthcare rally on the idea that we've got a more red Congress than the markets were pricing in. And that will probably be a vote against socializing healthcare.
Yeah.
Right. So you saw the healthcare stocks rally. I mean, they gave a lot of it back, but that could be a sector that, you know, just marches onward and upward on the idea that we're not going to be socializing US like we did, like, you know, the model that we see in Europe. And then you've got aerospace and defense stocks. We just went through an administration with no new wars and a dramatic troop headcount reduction, right? Is that going to happen under Biden? I doubt it. So now aerospace and defense is up like 15% since you know, the first Pfizer vaccine Monday. So, you know, I don't doubt that other sectors can, you know, have outsized returns. Maybe that means a sideways to slightly negative stock market, broadly speaking. But it doesn't mean that there won't be sectors that will be red hot inflation hedges that you need to be in, like, you know, things like Bitcoin, things like right now, industrial metals and mining. You know, I think gold, metals and mining will start rallying like they had been. But right now, the market to me is screaming that it's reacting to stimulus with copper and aluminum and iron ore and things like that and steel rallying the way that they are. That's generally what happens during, you know, this crazy, diabolical, massive currency devaluation that we're going through right now.
That's a good way to put it. It's something that I've been working on, and I want to float it past you to see if you think there's anything to it. One of the things that I think is certainly possible, especially on the political landscape, is you've got a significant change there at president, obviously. And then, like you said, at this point at least, looking like the Republicans are going to at least maintain their position in the Senate or still maintain a majority. Mm-hmm. So assuming that happens, assuming they're 51 or better in the Senate, McConnell puts – one of the things that I thought about the minute I saw those election results is I thought, you know what, this is interesting because as far as stimulus goes – in terms of the way we have seen it distributed this year, I think the election is actually a bad outcome for that kind of stimulus. And the reason why I say that is every time we've ever seen a Republican or Republicans hold the Senate or the House and there's a Democrat in the White House, it's amazing how fast they find their fiscal conservative again.
Right? Yes.
And talk of deficits and debt comes back. So I'm looking at this, and one of the other things that's getting me juiced about the whole value play and the energy play like you were talking about, so I said that on a show 2 weeks ago or whatever. McConnell comes out the next day and says – you know, we don't know if the economy needs another round of stimulus, which I was laughing at because I was like, oh, here it comes. Here comes the fiscal conservatives. So, but I do think that they're going to be much more sympathetic to infrastructure spending. And one of the things I thought about was if you go stimulus light and go bigger on the infrastructure side, that feeds right into this rotation that we're talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. You know, I still think it feeds into the rotation. I still think that, you know, the stimulus is a political football, like you say. And so I hate really having to lean on it. But no matter what, it's going to be coming from the Federal Reserve. It's going to be coming from the ECB. You know, we see what's going on in Japan and Bank of England right now. So the, if you just take a step back globally, we know that there is just a massive plan for more monetization going on, right? Expanded central bank balance sheets. So I feel like I've got to let that guide us. And yeah, you know, I mean, I can't, the politics is really hard to judge. I think if anything, that it may start to, you know, like you mentioned, to control the size of the stimulus that, you know, maybe they have to come to an agreement on. So that could be an issue for the markets where people get shortchanged. I mean, if you look at it, since the COVID thing came down, they said that we were going to be locked down for 2 weeks. We're now getting locked down again 11 months later, and the government has handed out $1,200.
Yeah.
You know, like what you mean? I mean, that, like, great job, fellas. We gave you one job, you know, and it's to bail the people out of this because, you know, my point is, it's not like I'm for it. Not like I think it's the right thing. But if that's what you're going to do, then actually do it, you know, and allow these loans to get out to businesses and allow, you know, some cash to make it to people's pockets and don't make it something political. If you really, you know, if you really honestly were elected to try to help the people, now's your chance. You know, so we can get a little bit, you know, politically crazy on this if we want to. Possibly it's probably warranted, you know, given the fact that our stimulus, and I speak for everybody, is being held for ransom over political ideas. Right. Yeah. And that's a lot of it is what it comes down to.
Well, the other thing, look, I'm traditionally, I got some comments from some clients that weren't happy about my comments about stimulus. And I've said over and over, look, it doesn't matter if you agree with it. It doesn't matter if you think it's the right way to go. One of the, and I'm traditionally anti-stimulus guy. I want markets to stay out of the way, or I want government to stay out of the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when the governments do the damage, when the government shuts down the economy, when the government effectively comes into these businesses, which is what they did, and ruins them, destroys them, right? They owe it. It's not stimulus. It's paying damages. Right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
it is.
And if you don't do that, you've just crushed these people. They've got an obligation to do it. We could go down a rabbit hole on this because one of the other things I thought about was, would the government have taken such draconian measures in lockdowns if they had not found this new little toy called the money printer? Right? Meaning that I think the ability to create cash out of thin air. And I don't want to get into the, you know, is it inflationary or anything, I kind of talk. But this ability to print cash out of thin air and the fact that nobody cares about government balance sheets anymore, it's great for stimulus. But one of the thoughts I've had is, would we even need the stimulus? Because I don't think if they weren't able to conjure money out of thin air, I don't think they'd have taken these draconian measures in the first place. Do you?
Oh, I don't disagree. Right.
Yeah.
I guess with the simple fact, Zach, that we can look back at the 2008 crisis when we began quantitative easing, that was a crisis. That was a true crisis of liquidity, right? That was a crisis where it came down to, you know, Lehman and Bear Stearns were collapsing because nobody in the market would take their name as a counterparty. And when you have that problem, you know, that's a liquidity problem. And so the Fed answered that with, okay, we need to replace this liquidity and the liquidity lost in the mortgage bonds when they imploded, you know, with quantitative easing and a bigger balance sheet and taking these securities onto our balance sheet. And now we've got an economic crisis that has been caused wholly by authoritarian government measures. And now it's a crisis of an economy, right? Of a total potential economic breakdown. And they're answering it with the same thing, quantitative easing. So in a crisis of liquidity, it's QE. In a crisis of, you know, drastic, dire economic measures, their answer is QE. And I would imagine that no matter what, the balance sheet is going to continue to get bigger. And something that really opened my mind to that, I don't know if you listened to Grant Williams and Felix Zuloff on Grant's awesome podcast, but he and Bill Fleckenstein asked Felix Zuloff what they thought the Fed balance sheet would get to. And I'm literally sitting there like, you know, inching my ear closer to my computer headphones to wait to hear what Felix says. And he goes, you know, in his Swiss German accent, I know, 40, 50 trillion. And, you know, you could hear Grant and Bill Fleckenstein go, oh my God, you know, and you look at it that way and you're like, wow, 7 trillion from here. And that's after the last 3 trillion that we hockey sticked on there after the first stimulus measure, right? So we went from 4.2 to 7 trillion, and Felix Zuloff is talking about expanding it to 50 trillion. Now you just start going through your head now, like, good God, where is the S&P? Where is gold? Where is the price of copper? Where might the price of oil or grains, God forbid, be? And this is these prices being a lot higher in a period of, you know, potential economic, you know, devastation and suffering, you know. So this is really, you know, this is the wealth divide coming to life, right? Yeah. This is the wealth gap the Federal Reserve is largely sponsoring coming to life before our eyes. And that's when it gets a little bit hairy. Excuse me one second. I have to cough. I'm sorry. Sorry about that, Zach.
No worries, buddy.
You can cut that out, right?
Well, yeah, I can, but I mean, you know, we're also not CNN or something like that, you know.
So, no, that's true.
Hey, it's the price of admission, man. You got to hear somebody cough.
No, that's fine. Good.
No, that makes perfect sense to me, and that's kind of, honestly, man, I've been looking for a catalyst for this for too long. You know, again, being a as you can imagine, and you know it. You know, being a value-based guy, last time you and I spoke, we talked about my own personal evolution. Thanks to guys like you that have helped on that journey, realizing that you cannot look at the market through that lens. You also have to see it as a trader as well and understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. When I look at all these things and I'm thinking and looking at my own stuff and listening to what you're saying, it is amazing to me, though, watching this for the last several years. I have not honestly – there were points where I hoped this rotation was happening. I look at it now, and it just seems like all the stars are aligned, you know what I mean, where it's mm-hmm. just come together. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, this is happening. Now, to that end, flipping back over the tech side of it, again, as a trader – one of the things I've been keeping an eye on because of things I've learned from guys like you is watching, and again, it's something that I haven't seen in a really long time, watching these tech companies come out one after another and announce earnings beats and watch the stock sell off.
Yeah.
It happened in Neo again yesterday. Apple, yeah. Amazon. I mean, it's happened to almost all of them. Facebook. What do you take from that? What does that mean to you as a trader?
That's the end of the rotation, man. You know, that's the end of the rotation. They were going up on whatever news they came out with for, you know, however many years straight. And now they're struggling, you know, after the two biggest, most popular optic stocks in the NASDAQ after a split, right? That loaded everybody up good and long with Tesla and Apple. You know, and if you look back to, you know, the dot-com bubble, you know, Nokia was a very conspicuous 4-for-1 split. I think it was in February of 2000, or excuse me, it might have been later, April of 2000, just as the, you know, literally the NASDAQ was coming down sharply from 5K. And, you know, those are the types of signals, and it went along with exquisitely bullish sentiment. Because people that had been long technology for the ride were all of a sudden getting a cherry on top of the cake this year when that NASDAQ whale came in and started buying upside calls in all these stocks like a drunken sailor. So that money being put to work sort of gave everybody that false sense of security in being able to buy tech stocks every day. And then finally, you know, they got their bell rung, you know, buying them greedily after the third day of the Apple split, you know, and then next thing you know, you look back and just 3 weeks ago, like you said, exactly as you said, Zach, Apple and Amazon reported on Friday, both reported good quarters, both ended the week down 5%. You know, to me, that tells a huge story. You know, that's the beginning of stocks going down on good news, right? That's the beginning of a turn in the rotation. But, you know, this the market still does have muscle memory. So when all of a sudden there's a reason to buy tech stocks, they just fly off the handle and go, or they all the sectors just go straight up because everybody feels like, well, maybe this is the dip in tech. But the reality is that tech is actually getting out of favor. Zach, when is it going to be? When is it going to get better for technology than when everybody is locked in their home?
Well, and that's what I was telling. When I listened to you lay it out like that, it took my own thoughts and I went, oh my God, he's right. You dropped the perfect catalyst. Yeah. But we were all saying what COVID does to tech. One of the things I'd forgotten about is what about when COVID ends? You can't, right? You can't justify the COVID premium anymore in this stuff, right? Nope. What is Zoom off? Zoom's off, what, 30% off its highs now?
Hell yeah. Same Peloton, right? All the stay-at-home stocks have gotten crushed. Suddenly, solar stocks have stopped rallying. You know, the sector that went from 20 to 80 while Joe Biden was polling in front as presidential in the election. And now Joe Biden has won the election and they stopped going up. So that's conspicuous to me, right? This might be the big turn in fossil fuel rally versus alternative energy backing off.
Yep.
You know, to me, this could be the huge turning point. That's one of the trades at the tippy top of my radar screen. I am not short any solar yet, but I'm looking to do that. And I am long all kinds of fossil fuels, as you know, and the other natural resource plays.
We've dug into, just as an aside, we were digging into some of those solar things year and a half ago. Just, you know, I knew that they were overheated, but, you know, things are moving that way and looking to see if we could find a diamond in the rough. We found a couple that were more clean. Valuation didn't make much sense. And we had a modest long position at that point. And based off of the possibility of Biden winning, and we got a wonderful ride on those and then blew them out. Not right at the top, but pretty close. The timing was a bit lucky, but for those same reasons. And I'll just tell you, from a guy that's done the work on these things, watching those things go up the way they did, I mean, you know, no one's talking about it because it's not Tesla and it's not Apple. Those things are you want to talk about silly valuations? Start digging into those solar companies. It's numbing.
Yeah, and there's also some that have got potential hair on them too. So if you want to talk about some potential downsides, you know,
you got all the things in place there. Now, want to move to a different stock that I noticed today. It was another long that we picked up about a month ago, based on some good news coming down the pipeline, and that was Boeing. To hear people, I got so many calls on this because we had another. And if people want to know my bad timing stories, just call me because I've got a whole stack of those too.
Yeah, of course.
We all do. But we got really lucky on our call on Boeing 6 days before the second plane crash in 2019. We released did an hour-long show on Boeing and the research we had done on it in the previous three months. And we'd said, get out of Boeing. This thing's going to go down. The timing again was lucky. Thing got crushed. I never thought it'd be a long again. But we picked it up as a trade at right around 170, waiting for that FAA announcement to come out. And one of the thoughts I had is, okay, when that FAA announcement comes out, either Boeing is going to break through that previous resistance level at 235, or it's not and it's going to sell off. Now, I know Boeing isn't tech, but it's also been one of the darlings of this stock market run, right, up until 6 months ago, 7 months ago.
Yep.
The announcement from the FAA came out today. Stock popped right at the open, gave it all back. Now it's trading in the negative. Does that fit in? I mean, again, different stock, different sector. Would you say that's a one-off anomaly, or would you add that to the list of stocks selling off on good news?
I think that is maybe the culmination of this short-term run. You know, it's like these stocks. Zach, that's one of the names, whether we like it or not. The way I'm going to take it out of the Boeing specific story right now. Boeing is one of the names that was held down underwater because of the lockdowns, right? You know, the airline sector is going to get held down. Boeing is going to get held down, you know. And then we have, in my eyes, Boeing rallies and you know, breaks out of that range and above its moving averages on this Miracle Monday headline. you know, and it's the same thing where the stock is running now, you know, with the aerospace and defense sector. And then, the gap open this morning is just, you know, every short that's left possibly in the stock is just bidding it up in the pre-market to get out as fast as they can. And then you have the stock, you know, reverse. And so I, you know, when you're bullish a sector and you're bullish a name and it gaps open higher, as a trader, I'm often making a sale just to participate and see what happens and then buying it back that day on the close. You know, it's like, in these bull runs that you have in Boeing like this, there's going to be times when it just gets a little bit ahead of itself price-wise. And, you know, having the stock close yesterday at 210 and then open up this morning at 223, you know, you wake up some sellers on gaps higher. And so now I think it'll just back and fill like the rest of, you know, a lot of these breakaway gap stocks and start rallying again. I think Boeing's going to be in good shape. I mean, if it can live through this last crisis that it's living through, it can live through anything.
Yeah, well, and they've also got, I mean, talk about stimulus, right? They got a lot of government contracts. I've told them.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh.
It never stops. No, and at never no stops. Point do you need to worry about their insolvency, because if they've got to fund it directly, they're going to, because they can't let Airbus or any Chinese manufacturers coming online. You know, they can't allow somebody else to monopolize that business and not have a U.S. producer.
I don't disagree. If you're long Boeing and Google, you're long the U.S. Gov, so I think you're in good shape.
Well, you're booing me because I didn't lead you up. We sold Boeing on the pop this morning.
That was a great sale.
Well, thank you. We didn't get it right at the top. I wish we did. But
whatever. You make a sale on a day when everybody's buying it, and now you'll get a chance to buy it back cheaper if you want, or move on.
Well, there we go. See, I'm learning, man. I'm learning. I'm developing my trader chops here.
I love it.
Okay, so another one, just flipping a little bit, another stalwart or poster child of this insanity in tech, even though it's not a tech company as much as they'd like you to think it is, Tesla. I continue to be amazed at the resiliency of this stock, that Adam Jonas, the guy is in the bag. I put out a tweet, I don't know if you saw it, but it just hit me this morning. I thought, you know what? This Jonas guy in Tesla, I'll tell you, it reminds me exactly of Jack Grubman in WorldCom.
Comparison.
I said that Adam Jonas is Jack Grubman 2.0. Puts out a note saying the price of the stock's going to 540. The stock's up 10% on the day on that news. Is this thing ever going to stop? I mean, you got to give the stock credit and their longs credit because, you know, I thought it was a short $360 billion dollars of market cap ago. Thank God I didn't step in front of it. But what is ever? I mean, reality clearly doesn't matter, Tony. What do you make of this one?
Oh man, Zach, I'm going to tell you, I'm so far up in the bleachers of the Tesla trade that I sort of just look at it from that view, right? And what I see, is, you know, two cults battling away, right? You've got the bull cult and the bear cult. And if you listen to a calmly displayed, coherent bull case, right, like I guess I heard from Vitaly Katsenelson, a friend of mine in the markets, is an outstanding analyst, and he articulated the bull case a long time ago. And I'm talking with the stock when the stock was down, you know, pre-split, it was down at $400. So this is ages ago, right? And he's telling me, look, you know, Apple took over the phone markets. They were not a phone maker. You know, so they took over the handset market. Somebody from outside the market took over that market from Nokia, from everybody else. And that's how he's looking at Tesla. And he's looking at Tesla like, you know, it's not going to be the king of EVs is not going to be Mercedes or BMW or, you know, God forbid, Ford or GM. It's going to be somebody from outside the market, because that's how markets prefer to have a market leader take over. And, you know, that's his explanation. And he had some more juice behind it. And, you know, he had some other good comparisons. And I don't know how else to say it, but, you know, this is looks like what's transpiring, whether we like it or not, whether, you know, the market is saying basically that it can look past all the fraud in broad daylight. It can look past the manufacturing intents. It can look past the promises from Elon Musk. It can look past the ridiculous tweets and say, these guys are going to be the leader because they still have somehow they're the Apple's eye of the EV market. Now, do I agree with that case? No, that's the bull case. You know, I'm not the kind of person that can. I stay out of these stocks. Anything that is this highly contested, that sucks up this much oxygen, I stay away from, because all you wind up doing is fighting with people with the opposing view, and that makes no sense at all to me.
Right.
You know, I'd rather be talking intelligently with somebody with the opposing view, and you know, you can't do that in Tesla.
No.
You know, it's really difficult because you believe in two different things. The bull case is that they're going to be the future electronic vehicles and actually make it. And the bear case is that a thing is so wrought with fraud that if the SEC ever investigated it, the thing would come apart. And maybe it is the next Enron. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm scared because I'm in the camp of guys that think it is the next Enron. And at the same time, the price is proving us goddamn wrong right now.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, it's nice that I may have that thought or belief about Tesla, but it means nothing. So I kind of just look at it from a distance and say, as long as they can keep this narrative going, and as long as the stock will react like this, you know, put it this way. Tommy Thornton is one of my other mentors and friends in the markets. And you know, we were talking briefly about this pop in Tesla post S&P inclusion. And, you know, I think he tweeted, he was like, Merry Christmas, everyone. This pop on the S&P inclusion is a gift. Now, he says that because he sees the stock technically wearing down. You know, and so this is before the Adam Jonas upgrade, but this is something that, you know, Tom would probably happily sell into, because the upgrade doesn't mean anything to him. All it means is that he's getting better prices, right? If the reality is this is a last gasp to 500 post split in Tesla, then long holders may have a problem, right? Especially if they buy it up again and don't get it through the highs. Now, right now, it looks like it's going to go sailing through that $500 high by tomorrow's opening, but stranger things have happened, right? Maybe tomorrow it gaps open at 501 and we never see that price again. You know, I mean, meaning it goes straight down from there because right. Everybody's so long Tesla after the split, after the Adam Jonas Morgan Stanley upgrade. I mean, what else can they do for Tesla to make it go up? I don't know.
Well, look, as their sales improve in China, you could see some multiple expansion.
Yeah, sure. They can expand it even further, with no doubt.
Oh, my God. No, man, it's just, I'm not even close to the first guy that said it, but it really is, you know, it's really a magical market. You know, you look at like NIO over there in China. You were running, Tony, 4 months ago, the thing was insolvent. It was going bankrupt and needed to be bailed out by the CCP. Now, since then, in 4 months, it's tacked on $60 billion in market cap. Something like that?
Yeah. Beyond me, man. Beyond
right.
Me
I mean,
stuff.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's magical markets.
I stick to my natural resource knitting, Zach. No matter what's going on all around me, I feel like, you know, if you can get into those trades that you have the tailwinds from other markets, meaning commodity and currency markets, that you can sleep a little bit better at night. But that's just personal taste.
Well, I'm with you, especially I haven't been. I don't think we had any net exposure to energy in our value portfolio from 2017 until COVID. I think energy right now, I mean, talk about overweight. I think we're 12 or 13% of the portfolio.
Smart.
But I mean, there's the trading aspect that you're looking at. But man, you go do the fundamental analysis on these things. And unless oil is going negative again. Good God, at these prices, throwing off that kind of yield with the, you know, assuming you're talking about the ones with good balance sheets that can survive the, you know, I don't think oil is going straight to 80, but, you know, survive the bumps. I mean, have you seen a better, now obviously things have to go right, but in your career, have you seen a better entry point into energy as a sector than what it looks like right now?
F no, right. You know, like no, man. I mean, I've been on this trade with you, and you know, I've said vocally that, you know, somewhere around here is a place to make a generational bet on the long side from oil. I really believe that. Yep. You know what I mean? Like I'm a commodity trader, and by nature, I cannot stand viscerally being caught short commodities. So and being a momentum trader and seeing how these stocks have been beaten up, thrown out, and then beaten up again, and they still haven't made a new low below the March low. You know, it's kind of, you know, this is the kind of time where, you know, sentiment couldn't be more negative. The chart couldn't be more, you know, bottom, you know, heaving and not going down. And so you say this is the value play. So yes, I'm totally with you. It totally makes sense also timing wise that everybody heading into the election with Joe Biden polling to be a favorite and talking about ending fracking, that anyone responsible, anyone trading an energy pad responsibly has got to get out of the way of that by the time Joe Biden gets elected. And, you know, if you look at the path of the stocks, you know, even after the lockdown, it looks like everybody was like, OK, just make sure you're out of all your fossil fuel names by the time, you know, Captain Green Energy gets elected. And so they did that and they didn't make a new low. And so, you know, you have guys like me and Jared Dillian and Tom Thornton and Raoul and everybody else and you salivating and saying, well, you know, so there's going to be money coming into the sector now, no matter what. And so let's see if it can stand. You know, it's going to take another couple of beatings and it's going to take a while before sentiment changes. But I'm a guy that could see $80 oil, right? I'm an oil bull from these levels. I loved Goldman Sachs's fourth quarter estimates for next year that just came out of $60 oil. And that's for fourth quarter 2021. So, you know, you take me out to 2025 and we get the all global economies cranking again, except the board of distribution looks totally different because we're going to be in an increasingly more, I think, nationalistic sort of trade, you know, type of scenario. Even with Biden as a presidency, I think trade routes have been permanently altered. And so I think that that's going to be an upward price pressure on oil. And you've still got China, you know, China just reported, I think, the biggest importing month or the second biggest importing month ever. And they were the big driver of energy prices. So, you know, if they come back to full strength, the U.S. comes back to full strength, that leads the world back to full strength, and we don't have the same supply situation that we have now, I could easily see oil doubling from last sale.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, now they can come back, right? The process to come back takes a lot longer than I think the investing public at large recognizes.
Yeah.
But you've taken a ton of supply off the market in the form of shale, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And we also had, you know, rig count down below 200, you know, and it was amazing to see. Yeah, you know, exactly. Up from, you know, how many rigs did we have? 800, 900 rigs out there in 2000.
Close to 1,000,
yeah. Yeah. In 2018. And so, you know, but what's amazing to see is that that also bottomed with the, you know, with the incoming Biden administration, with the, you know, total bottoming in energy, which is thrown on by ESG, right? All the ESG investors also had to be out of all the fossil fuels, you know, and they had to be positioned in their solar stocks. So this trade to me, like with, especially with the counterbalance that you can look over at watch the solar stocks, this is a sort of generational moment in this energy sector right now that I'm very carefully trying to exploit. So yeah, the opportunity looks, I mean, as good as it does, as you know, one of the things to me also, Zach, that makes it look so good is that we just had this episode where oil traded zero, right? And everybody's got the, you know, everybody's got that on their mind. They've got that scar, like, oh man, you know, remember when energy went negative? And man, I don't want to buy USO because that might happen again, right? A lot of people have already said that to me, not even knowing that USO restructured so that they can't have that happen again, right? So USO, the ETF, can't have any front month positions past a certain date, and they've got to whittle them down by a certain date. And so that won't happen again. But what it does is it drives investors away, right? It drives investors away from that sector. They're like, ooh, that's a voodoo sector. That thing just went to zero.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, I'm just saying it takes a while before the, you know, people will say, yeah, let's buy energy. And by that time, it'll be too late and we'll be, you know, up five times our money.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, pal.
And exactly.
And all the other one too, I will say, is that
again, listening to guys like you, taking more of that trader stance. Whenever I have seen, when I've started, you know, adding that to my repertoire and working on that part of it, whenever I've seen the narrative and the fundamentals and valuation line up at the same time, I can't remember, but I don't think I've had, you know, any substantial losses when that has occurred. You know, when you've married those two things up, and much like you said, you're just looking. I mean, for instance, you know, the path is going to be crooked, and like you, I'm anticipating another beat down on energy. But yeah. It's really, I mean, let's try to sit here and envision a scenario that justifies lower oil prices than negative $37. Right,
like, right.
Right. I mean, let's try to imagine that storm.
Try to imagine it. By the way, with OPEC and Saudi Arabia choking on it at this price and doing anything they can to get it higher, right? Like, don't forget about that part of the scenario. It's not exactly trading on its own devices once it's at cost of production. You know what right. I mean? They're turning off the taps and they're trying to do everything they can to try to get the price back up and to create shortages where they can, you know? And so, you know, I'm just saying is that, you know, there's also a counterforce working against it going down below the cost of production. And they usually act pretty aggressively once they realize that the tide turned, you know, and once there's a bigger demand in oil than the supply, that's when they cut supply. And next thing you know, the thing is $20 higher. So that's a scenario that I'm anticipating over the next 2 years.
Okay, so you've spent a lot of time and had a lot of great calls in the natural resource sector in energy.
Thank you.
Said that's something that you've made me money, man. You've had some great ones.
Good.
Switching over to one, we've referenced scars a few times. I've got some scars from this one, and I'm watching it again because the same story, valuation, stocks have been obliterated. How do you see Nat Gas playing into this?
Oh man, I'm pleading the fifth here on you, Zach.
God,
I really am. Yeah, I abandoned Nat Gas like a long time ago. You know, I've seen it go from 2 to 12 twice in my life. You know, it's exciting every time. It seems to be a real, real insider's game in terms of the people that I know that traffic in it successfully over a long period of time. You know what I mean? Like the natural gas survivors. Those guys are the guys that have calls into Houston, left, right, and center. They have calls all over the place. And so they know what's going on. I don't have any of those calls. So I'm, you know, anytime I feel like I have a view in natural gas, I literally just have to admit that it's finger in the wind. And so that anything that I said now would also be finger in the wind. And I look at it and the last, you know, 5 years, it's been either side of 250, you know, so who am I to make a call from here other than I would never be shorted? Because like I said, I've seen it go from 2 to 12 twice. And that's only the only view I have in natural gas. Other than As the stocks are part of the energy sector and the stocks are part of that group that is totally washed out and looks like it's trading at values where literally nobody cares anymore, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that's fair to say, because I can't come out and say that I have a strong view that natural gas is going to go up and that's going to help lift Concho or, you know, or Swanee or any of the other producers. You know, I don't have that kind of view. All I have the view is that I look at the charts and they look beat to death too, and it looks like that they should rally from here. So we'll see.
It is that, and it's funny because completely independent of you, I've come to the same conclusion. It just moves to the beat of its own drum. Is that mm-hmm. because it is I'm forgetting the term, but in mining, you know, you got the gold mines and they throw off a certain amount of silver, right, as a byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because it's got such a big byproduct production component to it coming off of fracking? I mean, why does it do that?
I think that's a great way to look at it. You know, it's, you know, as part of the energy pull that they're pulling out of the ground, you know, it's just a component, you know, and it's also, you know, found in different areas than, you know, fossil fuels are in some places, right? So it's really, really hairy to figure out. You know, at least with the oil, you've got the components, all of the transparent components of storage, of exchange traded products, of, you know, reading spread. threads and understanding why that's happening. I feel like you don't have that in the natural gas market as much, or at least I don't. And it's probably because I'm not a specialist in that market. But crude oil just seems a lot more transparent to me with, you know, crude oil, heating oil as a proxy for jet fuel and then gasoline. And if you read the crack spreads and kind of understand their relationship, you know, then they, you have a lot more cards to play with in terms of making a decision on where it's going. With natural gas, you know, I kind of stay out of that whole game because I do not understand it very well how it trades.
Well, that puts you and I on the same side of it.
Nice.
Because I've been looking at some of the stocks, and, you know, like you said, the charts, I mean, look like it's been a nuclear winter. It has mm-hmm. been. Valuations look dirt cheap. I've been sucked into that game before. I remember we had a good long nat gas position coming out of the financial crisis, and it did nothing except hurt us, and it just didn't rebound at all. And that, so I learned that one the hard way. Okay. And I haven't heard you talk a lot about this, so I don't know. I mean, you're a trader, so I know you're paying attention to vol all the time. Volatility is interesting to me. We seem to be back, at least in the interim. I don't believe the VIX has printed below 21 on the year. Since COVID, right?
Correct. Below 20, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think we're back to more traditional volatility levels? I know that, you know, 20, for me, I'm looking at this thing, 22, 21 on the VIX seems pretty subdued. Then you look at the single stock volatility, and it is still massive. You know, I can just see that in our own portfolio, too. I mean, you know, these things are moving like crazy. Do you think that we're back into a higher volatility regime for an extended period of time, or do you think we'll drift back to the 13, 15 levels again?
No, I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, well, put it this way. I don't think we're going to see 8 to 12 ever again. You know, 8 to 12 got blown up when the XIV got blown up in 2018, right? So 8 to 12 range, throw that out the window, right? After that, the range, the low was probably 12 bid at, you know, 30 or so. And that was the range for a while. And you know, we had the 12 bid at 20 range. And then we had COVID explode everything. We haven't been below 20 since. So, given the fact that, you know, the VIX right now is printing above 20, and, you know, the S&P was just trading 36, you know, at literally a percent within all-time highs, it looks like that the volatility is, you know, the volatility is pricing in quite a premium to where it's been in the past. So I would agree that higher vol stays with us for longer. I would definitely agree that buying volatility below 20 in various forms, if you're interested in protecting your portfolio, is probably worth it. You know, that would probably mean the S&P floating away to some higher price. And why not hedge something with cheap vol that you might get a chance to sell higher? You know, just that's the way I'm thinking about things. But yeah, volatility regime looks like it's going to be higher for now, man. I mean, you know, given the way the country looks, given the way the world looks, given the economic damage we're going to have to deal with from COVID, given the potential social constructs around that, Zach, I mean, there's tape mines all over the place.
Yeah, no, there really is. And that's one of the things that my personal outlook, and you know, I'd like to see if it jives with yours, but my personal outlook is because of the infrastructure spending and the stimulus and all the different things we've discussed, I still think for my chair that general direction of market is still heading higher. I just think it's going to be a lot more of a bumpy ride and a lot bigger swings, a lot more volatility. Is that kind of how you're seeing it?
Yeah, I am. And I think it's going to be very much a battle, like we talked about before, between big tech and the inflation hedges. You know, but the inflation hedges to me have come to life. The bond market has come to life, confirming them and them confirming each other. So I'm, to be honest with you, for the S&P, I'm in sort of what I call the Ralph Acampora camp right now. That's Ralph Acampora from UBS that was just quoted as saying, "I'm so bullish, I have to sit down and calm down." You know what I mean? I feel like that's like an Italian expression that I'm very much in touch with, because when I look at the tape and I look at the rotation at the end of every day and where the S&P settles and how copper and crude oil and many other metals and base metals are rallying really sharply, and the dollar is going down as planned and looks like it's about, you know, days, minutes, or seconds from breaking down through 92 in the dollar index, you know, doing exactly what the Federal Reserve wants and inflating assets, man, I feel like the writing is on the wall for a higher stock market.
Yeah, it just really seems hard to not see that in the cards. Like you said, too, especially with the stimulus, whether it is infrastructure or more the traditional sense, the Fed, we obviously know, ain't backing away from this market. Another interesting thing to me is the bond, you know, the bond bears are out in full force now. I cannot see the Fed letting the 10-year or any. I can't see them letting these things run much further. Can you?
Probably correct, unless the market can bear it.
Maybe let it creep up and just kind of see how it behaves, see how it's taking it, that kind of thing.
Hey, man, you know, if the S&P is at 3,700 with the 10-year at 1.25.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. If economic data is coming along, you know, in line or beating expectations or coming back to life after COVID, however you want to put it. But, you know, it's all about what the market will bear, whether they will act. You know, then, you know, say the S&P collapses to 2,700, then they're not going to tolerate, you know, 0.9 in the 10-year, right? They'll probably drive that thing back to 20 basis points, you know, if there's some kind of a shock to the markets, right?
Yeah.
So, but now consider what their response to the shock is going to be. More of the same, right? More stimulus, bigger balance sheet, contributes more to the inflationary trades. So, you know, while that, like we said, that's the point of nonlinear inflation trades and the nonlinear path higher in this market. It's like the same battle that the market's seeing right now between lockdowns and vaccine world, vaccine life. You know, the market's reading vaccine life as all systems go, post-vaccine life. And then all of a sudden, you know, New York City schools close and the S&P backs off 50 points and the yield curve backs off 10 basis points off the highs and everything kind of cools down a little bit. But, you know, that seems to be the dynamic and that seems to be the give and take and the give and go. And, you know, if you can sort of stay in the flow of the tape trading higher within that give and take, then I think you're doing the right thing to your portfolio.
Yeah. Now, I know you're a busy guy, so we don't have a lot more time and I don't want to hold you too long. But
all good, buddy.
Another one, as a trader's perspective, and we have a small position as a hedge for our clients, but Bitcoin. I don't think you and I have talked about it. The reason it's interesting to me is Bitcoin was like a non-fraudulent Tesla for me, meaning that I thought there were very brilliant people on both sides of the argument. I thoroughly understood both the bull and the bear case. And for a long time, I run retail money. So, you know, I've got some constraints on how I do things. So that was part of it. But as for Bitcoin being a bubble, this would be the first bubble that, you know, that chart would say otherwise, wouldn't it? I mean, tulips didn't make a run back to their high, right? I mean, what do you make of that chart, and what are your thoughts on Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is happening, right? Bitcoin, like it or not, has got the intellectual support of everyone that it needs in its bandwagon now, with Paul Tudor Jones and Stan Druckenmiller and Mike Novogratz and Raoul Powell. And, you know, it's got the smarties of the world. They're like, yeah, this thing is all systems go. Then you move on to things like just happened with PayPal, where PayPal is basically opening up a sort of, you know, cryptocurrency platform, Bitcoin platform a little bit on the PayPal service that's going to allow you to use it. That's going to enhance the uptake of using Bitcoin. It makes it a lot more fungible for people, puts it right in front of your nose in more places than Coinbase. So, you know, that adds to the potential ubiquity of it. And, you know, with the price rallying, is, you know, it seems to be rallying to Mizak in response to two things. It rallies in response to more stimulus. It seems like every time the US or the ECB or the Bank of Japan has a more stimulus, ongoing stimulus, lower rates for longer statement, Bitcoin legs up again. And I feel like it's rejecting this new reset post-COVID that sort of just slipped out of, like, Justin Trudeau's mouth, where, you know, he's kind of admitting that they're using this COVID as a great reset to address poverty and inequality. And, you know, and I think people look at that and they're like, that's batshit crazy. Like, I want on another system. And if the only other system I can buy into to reflect displeasure with this globalist theme and this, you know, batshit crazy reset that you guys think is going on out there, I'm going to go buy some gold. Other guy's going to go buy some cryptocurrency. And, you know, we're going to cling on to something that we think is, you know, impenetrable by this globalist force out there. So, you know, that's a little crazy maybe, but that's the way I'm looking at it. That's the way it seems to trade in terms of narrative.
It sure does. Here's the other one that I'm thinking about is that as tech is stalling out here, and you know, it's funny to me because there are disadvantages of managing retail money, and there are advantages because you get to see all the portfolios, right?
Yeah.
And you're talking to retail investors on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. I think a core problem with Bitcoin from that drop it had, I mean, A, it went up too fast and it went parabolic, but I think the biggest issue is that's when tech really start getting nuts. And, you know, it's like that cartoon movie Up, or the Disney movie Up, you know, where they got the talking dog and he quits mid-conversation. He says, squirrel, you know, Jay, that's kind of the way the retail investors are. I've long thought that Bitcoin wouldn't make its second run until you stalled out in tech. If these people start seeing, you know, 5-10% down days with Tesla, and these SaaS companies starting to, you know, float back down, and they see Bitcoin breaking out, I think you're going to see a giant rotation of Robinhood money back over into Bitcoin. And as you and I both know, the way that market's set up, you don't need unbelievably big inflows to move that thing a lot.
No, or outflows to move it a lot. You know, right. Like, you know, let's not forget that into the, you know, into the, that thing, you know, that thing went from 10,000 to 4,000 in the lockdown crash.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so percentage wise, you know, to me, that's when I bailed out, like, quite literally. I never had a position bigger than something that I would have bet in a blackjack hand on a good day in Vegas. But my point is, that's when I had, you know, I had that as a placeholder, as like, OK, I'm in on Coinbase. I've got XYZ amount of Bitcoin. It's a real enough amount to follow. Let's go. And so as soon as it gapped down through like 8,000, that day that it went from 8 to 6, I was like, OK, I'm hitting the first bid I see to get out of this thing, because I have no interest in being long this when I know now the equity market is becoming so volatile that, you know, I can make any of this money back in 2 trading sessions, you know, or one swell trade, you know, one, you know, depth trade. So it's like, you know, the casino and equities gets hot. And I was like, why do I want to be long cryptocurrency, especially when I thought that it should have held its value during the lockdown session? You know, so I misunderstood it dramatically back then. And I bet it knocked me off of the Bronco. And at the same time, now 75% above its 100-day moving average, you know, it's getting New York Post Twitter coverage. I've got retail investors calling me up asking me how they can invest. I could tell you that, you know, reading Mike Novogratz saying just yesterday, like, you know, you don't know if you want to know how to, you know, risk adjust price Bitcoin, just so you know, I just bought some, like, it's still a buy up here at 17,000. And I'm like, wow, that sounds opportunistic after it bounced from 10K just a couple of months ago. So anyway, my point is, you know, it's going to trade just like everything else. When the boat gets lopsided long and everybody gets giddy that it's about to trade through 20K, that's probably when it's due to get its bell rung. And the retreat on this could be right back to 12,000.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it would be a great buy down there and still in its uptrend. But who wouldn't be shocked if, you know, the last 5 retail guys got a hold of it here at 18K. And then you read the Field and Stream Twitter just said, look at Bitcoin at 18K, you know, and now everybody that needs to buy Bitcoin in the world has got all the Bitcoin they need. And they're like, first bid that gets hit, it's gone.
Yeah.
So who knows? It'll be met with buying on the way down and buying from me. Certainly, I'd like to get back in on that train somewhere relatively sane. But, you know, that's the way this thing is going to go. And when we're getting texts again on Saturday morning, when you're online for bagels, when your friend's saying, you see Bitcoin here, that's usually when you should make a sale. If you look up at it 2 or 3 weeks later, because that's exactly what happened on the first run up to 20K.
Yep. Yeah, it just took off like a – well, it spread like a virus, pardon the pun, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, then you had guys reaching out to you about Bitcoin that never were talking about trading stocks with you, you know, that right. are all of a sudden like, hey, you see my Bitcoin this morning while you're, you know, eating lunch on the beach? You know, and I'm like, I really don't care, but yeah, that's nice, you know, and so
– it's a new world, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. We're it's talking, a brave new world.
Yeah, and it's amazing because you know, I was explaining it to a buddy of mine this morning. I've got a trainer, and he was asking me about Bitcoin, and I said to him, I go, yes, it could go through the bloody roof, but I said, you have to understand, all you're doing is buying a piece of code. That's it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't yeah, it, if you're starving. You can't take it to McDonald's.
Yep.
You know, but at the same time, you see the long story, and that's a fascinating one for me. So anyway, okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
We want to be, yeah, no, my last idea is that you want to be on Bitcoin's side, right? If you're going to pick sides in this, you know, grand argument of whether or not it should succeed or it should go up from, you know, we want to be on Bitcoin's side. The opposite side is, you know, the establishment.
Right.
You know, so I don't want to be rooting against Bitcoin at any point in my life. I'm consistently going to be rooting for it. It's just a question of where we invest. That's the only point I wanted to make, Zach. Let's wrap it up cleanly and tidily on that point.
Yeah, no. And I couldn't agree with you more. I've long said, look, it goes up, it goes down, whatever. I do believe the world would be a better place if Bitcoin
yeah.
was a much bigger part of the monetary system. You know,
Couldn't agree more.
Well, all righty, pal. You've been kind enough to stick with us here. And it's always a blast having you on and getting insights. Man, I'm loving the Navigator letter. And just to remind people, look, it is such a wonderful market wrap. It's a great way to start the day and to get a blow by blow of how things are going. If people want to subscribe to your and it comes out daily, I know you work your tail off on this thing.
I do.
I can't even imagine, man. And it's dense on a day-to-day basis. There's a lot of work going into it. How do people sign up for that, Tony?
Yeah, you can go to my website, www.tgmacro.com. There is a products page that points you to either my daily note, the Morning Navigator, or my more institutional-level package called the Point Lookout Package. And, you know, the Morning Navigator comes out every day. The Point Lookout Package has got some longer-form research reports that are monthly and have been good guidelines for portfolio managers type of traders. And so that's what I'm doing every day, Zach, is putting my analysis toward those reports and publications and doing my homework so that I'm, you know, trying to stay as much of a step ahead of this crazy market as humanly possible, which as we both know is sometimes impossible. But sometimes you can get a beat on it and see what's going on and ride away for a little bit. And I feel like that's what we're doing on the Morning Navigator right now.
Yep. And then they can also follow you at TG Macro on Twitter.
That's correct. At TG Macro on Twitter. You need me. If you want to send me an email, I'm tony@tgmacro.com. If you have any questions about the publication, I'd be happy to answer them for you. And I am grateful to you, Zach, for thinking of me and honestly just asking to hear about my insights. I'm flattered by that in and of itself. So thank you for having me on your call.
Oh, man, always. And Tone, you've earned it, man. You do great work, and I'm glad to be able to use you as a resource. So thanks again.
And anytime. Anytime. You say when, man, and I'm here.
All right, brother. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Hey, and you had a birthday too, man. We just had a birthday a week ago.
Yeah, man. We don't talk about it this side of the half century mark, though.
Yeah, no. Well, you don't look. See, you and I look like we could have gone to high school at the same 4 years, and I'm sitting there wondering. It must be that it's that East Coast New York thing that's keeping you young, right?
Yeah, it's the salt in the air, man. I live near the sea. That's all it is. Drink water. Live near the salt water. That's it, man. Secret to fresh life.
There you go, buddy. All right. Well, hey, have a good one, man. Thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Zach. Love you for it. Thank you.
You bet. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. That was none other than Tony Greer, TG Macro. Again, you can follow him at TG Macro on Twitter. Email him at tony@tgmacro.com. I strongly suggest it. Can't speak enough to the guy's work. And as always, we got to run, but we will be back next week. Got another good interview lined up, and we'll see you then. Until then, you know, behave yourselves, and we'll be back soon. This is Know Your Risk Radio Podcast, and we'll see you soon.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.